So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review way.
And well, it is I, the quintessential stud muffin, Joel, from Milwaukee to Green Bay. All the Wisconsin ladies say that it's the highlight of their day when I shoot my nuts at their face and spray.
I got Scotty in my corner to watch me really fuck somebody up. I can say that because this is pay-per-view.
And now Driven's got Francine.
Welcome to Review Away. My name is John Pollock, and I'm joined by a Starbucks-infused Wei Ting.
Well, it's a matcha.
A matcha? What the fuck? Is that the Oprah? That is the Oprah coffee.
No, it's not.
She's got her quote on the side, on the sleeve.
That's just the jacket, and as you can tell by me clearing the phlegm in my throat, I still have a bit of a cough.
Boy.
So, in preparation for this podcast, I am drinking, again, green tea with honey.
Man, a friend of mine came over on the weekend, and just, like, I've seen people before who have had a cold. I've never heard someone sound so horrible from a cold. Mm. Like, sinuses are all blocked. It was just like, oh my God, man. How can you get this sick from a cold?
Came over to your house?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I stayed away. I just was like, I'm leaving. You can watch TV or something.
Yeah. Get out of my house.
Well, so you're sick.
Yeah, I'm still a little sick.
Oh, God, stop it. God, there's nothing I hate more than when people do that on the air. It's gross. Mouth sometimes does that. I was like, oh, man, just turn the mic off. I can't. That and eating, like, just... They're gross. It's gross to me. You're being an asshole right now. We're done. We're done. Hardcore heaven. Next week, what are we going to review?
Anyway, I apologize.
Have a little decorum here for our listeners.
Decorum? What does that even mean?
Sounds like Wade Barrett.
No.
A little decorum.
Yeah. Well, sorry.
You're just...
What am I supposed to do? I mean, like, come on.
I feel you're doing it on purpose.
I'm really not.
Fuck with me. If you're indeed sick.
This is what the things we can get away with on
a podcast?
I suppose a podcast, yeah. I feel like if we... But, you know, even on radio, like, I feel like if we had a video camera in here, things would automatically be completely different. Like, I wouldn't feel right to do any of that.
We've got the music coming up. When we come back, we're going to get into your feedback. And when we get to there, we're then going to pick what is coming up on next week's review when Review Away continues here on blah, 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 blah. That's what it would sound like.
That would be the show. One week we should actually try to do like a produced, like as if we were going to be on a,
Maybe because both of us don't want to watch any more porn together. Maybe our next anniversary show, we'll do the produced Review Away.
Whoa.
Review Away sells out.
Okay. I thought you meant...
Like, we sold out.
I thought you meant we were going to review porn, but like in a very professional manner.
Well, if some wrestler comes out with a porn, we'd have to make that decision. But okay. I don't think there's any wrestler porn of late out there.
The porn wrestling porn DVD schedule is not.
Did China ever come out with... Wasn't she doing some Avengers deal or some...
She was supposed to be She-Hulk.
She-Hulk, that was it.
Yeah, let me,
I don't even know if that ever came out or
I
not.
I don't know. Anyway, I almost don't want to know.
That was traumatizing. That was actually the show that hooked my friend Paul that you've met. I think that was the first ever Review Away he listened to, and he listens quite frequently now. And he was just in awe of Wei Ting just and his viewing of this porn.
Why of all the reviews that we've done, that one would
I think it's a train wreck. It just screams disaster. That how can I not listen to this?
That was the review where I don't think we actually advertised what the review was on the Fight Network website. You just put like Queen of the Ring.
Yeah, Queen of the Ring.
And the photo was like something that you couldn't tell.
Oh,
that
they're was reviewing the Mildred Burke book.
So like we're always under the impression that our actual bosses at the Fight Network have no idea what we do while we're in here, and therefore I think they wouldn't be that happy if they knew that we were actually reviewing
these
this
are
porn.
This is the same network that aired Honey Wrestling as one of our big hooks back in the day.
You're right.
Women in vats of honey fighting each other in little to no clothing. So let's take a reality check.
It was actually a bit of a hit. Like Big John McCarthy was a big fan of that.
Oh, he could imagine him officiating.
Oh my God!
Are you ready? Let's stick it out. I don't know what you would
stick it out.
Well, I'm thinking of something a sticky pun for honey wrestling. Okay. That would be fun.
Yeah, it would be.
We still have to do the Brawl for All one day.
Yeah. Actually, somebody sent me a link of a compiled Brawl for All.
Someone sent us a DVD
all
of them compiled.
That's right.
So we have them. And I just watched one of the countdown shows. My favorite one is the top 10 blunders of all time. And one of them is the Brawl for All.
Well, maybe we'll do it before Jim Ross's boxing debut. Because this will be his, I guess this would have been his actual boxing debut.
I guess so, if you want to call it that. I guess it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, his boxing debut of calling a one-eyed Pierre Carl Ouellette in a legit fight. That would have been, man, what a disaster that thing was. Okay. I think we could spend hours talking about the Brawl for All.
I actually can't wait to watch it.
Yeah. Maybe we could get Bart Gunn on that show.
What's he up to?
Waiting for phone calls, I would imagine. He had a decent run over in All Japan about a decade ago with Jim Steele. But you don't hear his name much at all right now. I really don't know what's up with Michael Barton.
Mm.
But, yeah.
Okay.
Most fans just remember the Butterbean fight. Man was just knocked unconscious.
No.
How's Wednesday going for you?
Wednesday, not as busy. Actually, I'm very busy.
What's a Wednesday like for you typically? We wake up at 4 a.m. and do this show, and then we start the day. We've got our Fight News Now show Wednesday mornings that we tape.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, Wednesdays are actually very busy. That's right. We do our show.
Yeah, that is our... What is Fight News
Now?
That's
our flagship show.
Our flagship show. That's like our sports center, and we do it once a week on Wednesday nights.
Yeah. Well, it's a once-a-week sports center.
Yes.
Because, I mean, do you think there's enough combat sports news to do a full half-hour show every single day?
We could There's definitely enough news. Definitely enough news. The problem would be filling that with additional content, because whether it be you need some kind. Yeah, no. I think we could honestly. Yeah. I think if we stepped it up, we could do that show every day.
That is true. Between just wrestling news alone,
we do like the three round segment that airs within the body of Fight News Now. We basically do that every day.
Yeah,
and that would be its same segment, and the news at the top. I mean, it's going through just different news stories going on. I mean, I do look at the Law Daily Update, and guaranteed that's it's still like 70% wrestling in there. But there's so much news.
There is. The issue, I suppose, is just making those stories visual. It's not like we can go out and take cameras out to Bart Gunn is coming out with a boxing seminar.
Could you imagine? No, I don't know. I don't know what I was thinking there.
Okay.
It's more thinking about Bart Gunn. Well, we're going to dive into today's review. Is there anything else you want to get off your chest?
No.
No? Literally off your chest. I mean, well, I was giving you an out here to
I've got a
hack or something. Well, I've got my Balzac's blend here.
Mm-hmm.
Wei is drinking his matcha.
Mm-hmm.
What is matcha?
Green tea.
Green tea.
As far as I know.
Yeah. And what does the quote say on the jacket there?
Man, Starbucks now is pairing up with Oprah, and I suppose if there's anything...
What a deadly combination.
Oh, man. The two brands. The two brands of brands collide.
Her brand's really been increasing.
I know. She's done a great job.
Great brand.
With her brand. My jacket, my cup jacket says, and this is a quote from one Oprah Winfrey, "The only courage you ever need is the courage to live the life you want."
What a bullshit quote. Like, that's so unrealistic for 90% of the world out there. The courage to live the life you want to live. Easy to say that when you're Oprah. Go tell somebody out on the street who's just their biggest goal today is to eat lunch, to have the courage to live the life you want to live. Yeah, I'd love to have a home. Are you telling me to break and enter right now and just assume someone's home, steal a car? Give me the means of which to have the courage to live the life I want to live. Very, very head in the clouds kind of quote.
I want to be a 7 foot tall NBA player.
Well, have the courage to do that. Go storm the court and just start playing basketball. You'll find yourself in jail where you will need more courage to just live the rest of the day.
No, it really is bullshit. I don't like people spreading this type of thinking. I think in certain ways, yeah, in little bits and pieces. But you make it so general, it gives people the wrong impression. This is just as bad as telling people to don't achieve their dreams.
It's kind of like setting also feeling up people for like I'm in a position to tell you how to live your life.
She kind of is, though.
Oprah, really?
She's an expert.
Would you trade positions with Oprah if you could?
Yeah.
Directly. Oprah would be in the seat.
Yeah.
You would be off in Hawaii on one of her many estates.
Well, I'd be working. I'd be working really hard. Why wouldn't you want to be Oprah?
I would never want that degree of fame.
Why?
I never want that.
Yeah, but think of all the lives you get to touch. Every day.
Via Starbucks coffee?
No, through like TV and
I would not want that. I think we really take it for granted, the ability to just be a normal person that can walk out into the street and not be noticed.
Think about all the
money. I would never want to trade that in.
You wouldn't want at least a part of that money? You wouldn't want that? The fame, the glamour.
At what cost, Wei? At what cost? I'm sure, money's great.
She makes it work for her.
But would you really want to be a top-level famous person? I would never want that. I swear to Christ, I would not want that.
Yeah. No, maybe not.
Ever. Just for all the bullshit that comes with it. Never being left alone. Constantly got to stop.
Uh-huh.
Oh, God.
How do you ensure that that doesn't happen to you?
I keep talking about pro wrestling for a living and mixed martial arts. Got my nice little area.
Yeah.
The world doesn't know who the fuck John Paul
maybe if
is.
You
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I think if you stayed in Canada, you know, you can only be a famous Canadian.
Oh, yeah, Todd Pattengill out there, man. He just came and walked down the street any longer.
Yeah. No, I meant like if you're a famous Canadian, like who's the most famous Canadian? Is Celine Dion.
Don Cherry.
Okay, and I'm sure he can walk down the street like in the U.S. and nobody would bother him.
Yeah, but I don't live in the U.S., so nor does Don Cherry. So I don't think Don Cherry can just go out to Canadian Tire and not get accosted for people
okay.
wanting photos and, hey, sign my donut or whatever Canadians do.
But if he wanted to escape it, it'd just be a drive to cross the border. I don't think anybody would care.
Well, why would you want to have to leave a country just to... be anonymous. He lives in Canada. He's got to deal with that pressure.
Oh, just saying.
Well, Let's talk about Hardcore Heaven featuring a bunch of people who were famous in 2000. Varying degrees of longevity afterwards. This took place on Mother's Day, 2000. I had no clue when we picked this. From the Eagles Ballroom in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which one listener pointed out to us via a photo with a circle around a young Ken Anderson.
Yeah.
He was in the crowd.
Yeah.
Who had just started. I think he started wrestling in 98. So he was a worker at this point, just catching the show in his hometown.
Cool.
Ken Anderson will not be joining us on the show today, unfortunately, to review this particular event. Is Ken Anderson on Impact? He was on Impact last week.
How old would he have been?
Oh, Jesus.
Okay. I don't know why I asked.
Like around
this.
20.
Yeah?
I think around 20.
Okay. Sorry. I'm sorry that I just keep throwing these questions at you, expecting you to know all these answers. I just expect you to know everything.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. Well, that sounds,
I take it as a compliment.
That sounds about right.
About 20,
sure.
Most likely. Were you watching ECW on TNN?
I think I caught a couple episodes, but not regularly, nope.
Was it not your thing?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose at the time I never really knew when it was on. And if I did, I don't think I was ever home to catch it. It just wasn't.
Way was just a social butterfly out on Friday nights.
Is that when it was on?
It was on Friday nights. Yeah, it wasn't a great time slot. And that was back in the day where, like, I'd have to set my VCR. Like, that sounds so archaic now. Like, I bet you now I couldn't even program a VCR to record something. I wouldn't even know how. Mm-hmm. And that's what I used to have to do all the time.
Actually, you said a PVR, which can be just as involved.
I find a PVR is pretty simple.
Okay. Anyway, so no, I never watched it.
Yeah. It was a decent show while it lasted.
Was it?
I remember one year, it would have been 1999, where they put on shows on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. And I remember going to Christmas Eve Mass with my family and then coming home with my brother to watch Mike Awesome and Masato Tanaka for the ECW title on Christmas Eve. And I would have been 15 years old, and I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
And I was like... I loved,
what a great way to celebrate.
I loved watching Mike Awesome and Masato Tanaka matches at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Probably wouldn't care for them as much today. But on Christmas Eve, and then they did the rematch the next week on New Year's Eve. I thought it was great.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll get into some of that.
Oh, we will. So Hardcore Heaven, Sunday, May the 14th of 2000. This was, I guess... accelerating the countdown to ECW's eventual demise. Viacom had just acquired the rights to the WWF programming as their television deal had come due. How about that for timing?
Mm-hmm.
WWF just about to announce their new WWE, their new television deal now, some 14 years later.
Wow.
These reviews we pick, Way. We sound so brilliant. Mother's Day, television rights deals. Beautiful tie-ins. So... ECW was on TNN at the time, yet their broadcaster had just acquired the rights to the World Wrestling Federation's programming. So ECW was not in a great spot right now, and they would last until about October on the National Network, as it was called at this point in time. So we have Joey Styles and Joel Gertner welcomes everybody to the show. Crowd's going nuts. The crowd boos the Milwaukee Brewers, their own baseball team. I guess they had a bad year in 2000, and it was only May. They mention other Milwaukee institutions such as the Milwaukee Badgers, Bratwurst, and beer, which gets big cheers. They note it's happening on Mother's Day. Some of the signs in the crowd were actually censored.
Well,
they were blurred out.
Not this one.
Which one?
Hi, Mom, you whore.
You don't see signs like that anymore.
No.
Quite the... At least the fans bought into the stereotype of what the ECW audience was expecting present on. what asshole would you come up with that? Even for, you know, isn't this fun? What a jerk.
Maybe a mom, an asshole who was neglected as a child by maybe an alcoholic mother who beat them.
Who was a whore.
Yeah.
Like a literal whore.
Sure.
So maybe it was a factual sign, for all we know. Joel Gertner does his... his introduction, which includes him saying that the women of Milwaukee, the highlight of their day is when he shoots his nuts at their face and spray.
Yeah. So, I mean, so this was definitely an ECW show.
It was just weird to me to watch this show. Like, I don't think I even watched this pay-per-view back in 2000. But to see this on the WWE Network.
Right.
And to think in my head that we can have a guy use the word cunt on this show, but whatever this sign is in the crowd is too extreme for this broadcast, that we had to censor somebody's sign. It's like, what could that sign have possibly said that was so offensive?
I imagine it must have been more legal stuff, like maybe something about another company or. You're right. I don't know.
I don't think there's anything in there that could have been said that could have been that bad.
Can they say WWF now? Can they show WWF?
They can now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I really don't know. This definitely was an ECW show. And what really struck me about this was that I never thought the year 2000 would ever look dated to me. To me, like when I picture 2000 in my mind, that's either the present or the future still. But 2000, I look at this crowd and everything looks dated. Everybody in this crowd with these parted hair styles. I just never thought I'd look at 2000 this way.
It's the aging process. I mean, think of in 2000 if you were watching something from 1986. I mean, that's a long time in context, where 2000 doesn't feel that long ago because you remember it pretty well. You were a functioning teenager at the time. So I agree with you. This is certainly quite the nostalgic look back here in 2000, especially at ECW, when this presentation of pro wrestling was very much popular and accepted by pro wrestling fans, and just to see the evolution is interesting.
At the time, I'm sure, you know, it was pretty cool because it was shocking, but now, 14 years later,
I would hate this today.
It's already been just overdone.
You know? And that's it.
Like, think about what was popular at the time. It would be things like South Park, who really relied on kind of the shock value. But these days, even something like South Park evolved to become more than
South
just
Park
that.
Has completely changed from its earlier incarnation at the time. Styles tells the censors to go to hell, and then they just stop, walk to the back. It's very awkward, and we get this strange transition before the first music hits. And they would later explain this in the show, which sounded like the ultimate just cover for something going awry. And I don't know what it was, but it very weird. Mm-hmm. Very weird start where just everything stops. The announcers walk to the back. And I think the idea was, perhaps Cyrus was supposed to, because every pay-per-view, the joke was they would start and Cyrus would do something to take out Joel Gertner and he'd call the pay-per-view with Joey Styles. And I don't know if they were expecting Cyrus to do the run-in in the ring and instead had to do it in the back. I don't know what was happening. It felt like somebody missed their cue, and it could have been Cyrus, but I don't know the answer to what this was, but extremely awkward.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did this weird cover story later on in the show. Now, we've got to address the music situation here on this show. Just about, I think, every theme song was dubbed over in this to some generic ripoff of what the commercial theme was that they used at the time, which ECW always... They had no rights to any of this music. They just had big balls to just go ahead and use whatever the fuck they wanted on television,
literally,
no less.
Literally.
Literally big balls. And I've got to say, I've watched a lot of the older programming on the WWE Network. And some of these ECW shows, this music is a real downer to me. It really takes away from the show when you've got this... Some of these themes, like what Balls Mahoney came out with, like the most generic stuff.
No, Balls Mahoney actually, like, he actually came out to, like, an instrumental cover, which it sounded just like it. So I don't know if it was the ECW
version. It was just, to me, so obvious it was dubbed over that it just really took me out of it. And that most wrestling promotions, if this was done in WCW, I don't think it would be as big of a problem. But the music was such a big part of ECW that you're taking away a big part of the presentation. But they have to, obviously. Oh,
especially the Sandman, you know, who's really whole gimmick was his entrance in that song.
They did get some close instrumental versions to like Enter Sandman.
But it's
like you have the original to compare it to. So whatever you do, it's going to be
Sandman's entrance was completely different with a different song. They should have just went all out and put, like, I don't know, Jingle Bells underneath it or something.
So if you're going back to watch some of these ECW shows, certainly it's a little distracting, to say the least, with the music.
Yeah. I will say I'm always impressed at how whoever's editing these shows, how they're able to lift the commentary voices and everything out of the original recordings and, you know, sneak this new music underneath it.
And it's good because the ECW shows, the audio of the commentators and the music were put on the same track.
Yeah.
So for New Jack stuff, they had to put a new instrumental over top the Ice Cube song, and Joey Styles had to revoice New Jack's segment.
Oh,
so what
no
New
way.
Jack did on this show, that was Joey Styles over the last year or so voicing that having to call it as if it was in the year 2000.
That is very interesting. I never considered that. That's another reason that Joey Styles can keep his job, I suppose.
Thank God he's alive.
Yeah.
Or else you'd have to... Originally, they had taken down some of New Jack's segments off the network, and they have since put them back on with the updated commentary. But we will... maybe you, as more of the musical aficionado, maybe you can give a grade of how well they replaced the original music with instrumentals.
Well, I never watched much of original ECW, so I couldn't really tell you what the originals were to compare it to, unfortunately.
Well, we will navigate through some of these theme songs. Balls Mahoney comes out. He drinks a fan's beer, and this is where the music really just hits you. Before the match begins, Cyrus, who at the time, the storyline was he represented the network of TNN who were heels on their own network. Mm-hmm. So they would just bash TNN on TNN.
Yep.
It was quite novel. So Don Callis says, the network is taking control. The crowd is chanting, "You suck, dick." And Callis runs down Joel Gertner, says his fat body is a ratings killer. People don't buy his gimmick. And then Gertner says that he should kick Callis's ass. But FMW's Kentaro Kanemura ends up choking him out in the commentary's booth there, and Callis joins Styles for the rest of the night.
Yeah.
Were you a fan of Don Callis on color commentary?
I understand probably as a heel commentator he fulfilled an important role, but this whole network gimmick, I never really... I understand it's more done for satire, but I suppose I would have been able to buy more into it had he played more of a straight-up, you know, not such a flamboyant and loud pro wrestling type of heel manager instead of just some suit and tie guy.
First matchup of the night was Balls Mahoney and Masato Tanaka, who, believe it or not, is still a great worker in Japan in 2014. How, after watching a match like this, I can't tell you. But a much slimmer version of Masato Tanaka today. The fans applaud Mahoney as they start this match, actually doing some technical wrestling, including a single leg crab from Mahoney. Mahoney goes over the top to the floor and catches Tanaka on a pescado attempt, takes a beer from the crowd to attack Tanaka with. Then Tanaka goes up the runway with a chair and runs at Mahoney and hits him in the head for what would be a constant theme of this particular match, and then hits a tornado DDT on the ramp, and we go to an out-of-focus overhead shot. Very vintage ECW. Then they have a chair duel in the ring, ending with a chair going to the head of Tanaka, but he stays standing and takes three chair shots, just blasted into the head of Tanaka as he goes down for what else? A two count. So then Tanaka gets the chair, takes a super kick with the chair in front for a two count. Tanaka comes back with a tornado DDT and hits onto a bunch of chairs for a two count. Mahoney ducks the roaring elbow and hits the nutcracker sweet, two count. Tanaka hits his finish, the diamond dust, two count. Mahoney then hits the nutcracker sweet on top of the chairs, two count. And then Mahoney misses the Jersey jam, which is a leg drop off the ropes. And Tanaka hits the roaring elbow, two count. Then there's a chair shot off the top. Mahoney doesn't even bother going down for this chair shot. And Tanaka hits the roaring elbow for the win at 9 minutes and 14 seconds. Some people probably love this match. I hated it.
I liked it. Why did you hate it?
This is the last thing you need in an opening match. I do agree with.
If there's a complaint, it's that there's too much done here probably for an opening match. Like just kicking out of each other's finishers and then kicking out of finishers done on top of chairs, probably unnecessary. But as a standalone match, I thought it was very good.
Yeah, it was just way too much for me. Lance Storm is with and they we should mention they shook hands and hugged after the match. Lance Storm is with Dawn Marie for this cutaway promo where he rips on Justin Credible and said back in New York he had Scott and Kev, and here in ECW he always had him for protection, but tonight he's going to take Justin Credible's ECW title in the main event. So Credible had recently just won the ECW title, and it was during that period where it really hurt the ECW title, where you had Mike Awesome was the ECW champion. He was threatening to go on to Nitro and dump the title in the trash when Russo and Bischoff had just recently come back to Nitro, and they ended up having Awesome drop the title to, oh God, how did it work? To Tommy Dreamer, to Taz, and then Taz ended up working on, he was with the WWF at the time. Ultimately, it went then to Dreamer, and Dreamer to Justin Credible. So it got flipped all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Crazy time period for this ECW title, but it ended up on Justin Credible. Simon Diamond, Callis explains that there's a lot of heat and politics in the back going on regarding the main event. Key reasons you buy a pay-per-view, to see the politics worked out in a ring. Simon Diamond comes out with his entourage, says he is not a comedy act, and he's going to prove he is a blue-chip athlete. He's followed by Mikey Whipwreck with Sinister Minister, and then Little Guido with the FBI. They had a three-way match. Simon Diamond at one point had this awesome theme music at the time called Simon Says.
Oh, the rap song?
Yes, it was a rap song.
Yeah.
It was good. All three are fighting each other at the beginning. Guido goes to the floor after Whipwreck hits a super kick. They didn't really establish it at the beginning, but this was a typical ECW elimination match where it's each guy has to get eliminated, which is one of my biggest pet peeves now with these matches, is when you have elimination rules and guys are making saves for one another. I hate that.
Yeah, that's
especially the heel saving another guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why? Why would you make a save for him? It doesn't hurt you at all. It just expedites the process.
Yep.
Drives me insane way. Diamond hits a pair of vertical suplexes into a front suplex. The Prodigette, who is in the corner of Simon Diamond, got the chant of, she's a crack whore. And then the lights go out. No, Sabu was not appearing. The lights just went out.
Mm.
It was a malfunction here at the Eagles ballroom. The guys just kept going, doing spots in the dark.
Yeah, it was it actually made for a really cool, spontaneous atmosphere. I mean, I think this all kind of adds to the whole low-budget experience of something like an ECW where, oh, shit, in the middle of a show, lights will go out. And they had to just rely on the spotlight to basically illuminate everything. The audience was chanting, you fucked up, at the lights, I suppose. But they just kept the action going and managed to keep the match going at a pretty good pace.
What's your theory on kind of that line between being that underground underdog promotion like an ECW, where something like this happening can almost be a charm to it,
mm-hmm.
whereas Ring of Honor, they're just maligned for their production bullshit. I mean, ECW here, they were on TNN at the time.
Yeah.
What do you think is the difference?
A lot of it, I think, depends on the viewer's perspective. How you're going into it yourself. I mean, I think one of the things that made me not really get too involved into ECW was because as a younger fan, I was probably comparing it based on production values to what else I was seeing on WCW and WWE. And, you know, kind of to see the shitty camera work and shitty graphics, I couldn't really take it as seriously. But now, 14 years later, that type of thing you can't have anymore, and that type of this type of bad quality camera work and all the bad graphics, there's something that you only had with ECW, and it makes you kind of nostalgic for it. And I think that plays a lot, large part into, you know, the whole appeal too, is just nostalgia. And how it depends how the company itself plays it up. I feel like if you know, let's say a Ring of Honor tries to present itself as an alternative to the WWE, like as a competitor on the level of a WWE, and it doesn't look like that, then it's going to be laughed at. But if you present yourself as a low budget, you know, version of this show, but with a lot of heart and money is like, it's like the difference between seeing a rock band in a stadium versus seeing a rock band in a small little venue. Like the money's not going to be there, but what you do have are people that are incredibly passionate about what they're doing. So I think a lot of it depends on presentation, but at the very least, you need to make it presentable, make it watchable, which if you have a light shining in front of a camera for 40% of the show, there's no charm to that at all.
Yeah. And believe me, it's not to say that people did not criticize ECW at the time for their production values. There was that criticism. And people saying when they did go to TNN that they had to upgrade because there's way more people like you who are coming in with WWE or WCW, that's the standard. That's what you expect out of professional wrestling. Yeah. And there needs to be that compromise. You're not going to have a $600,000 production budget, but at the same time, you can't just be nuts and bolts and nothing to it, because there are people that is a huge part of it. And you're just simply going to draw a conclusion by tuning into this product that maybe you've never watched before and said, I'll get my wrestling on Monday nights.
If I was like a tape trader and just watching this, I it's the same as, you know, getting straight to DVD things or like getting straight to internet things these days. There's a lot more. You make a lot more excuses for, you know, lack of production value. But when you're being presented on a national level on TV, there are certain expectations that come with that.
So the lights are out here, and they would have varying degrees of issues with these lights. There was a Pescado by Diamond to his the circus on the floor, and Big Sal, who catches him, but then Whipwreck does a somersault dive over the top to take everybody down. Whipper hits the Whipper Snapper to Simon Diamond to eliminate him, and so we continue with Whipwreck and Guido. Whipwreck hit this great-looking double underhook spinning suplex that the crowd really popped for. Sal then hits Whipwreck from the floor. Guido hits a Russian leg sweep for a two count, then climbs up onto Sal's shoulders in the ring and misses an elbow drop. The lights go back out, and there's a fireball delivered to Big Sal, and then Guido hits the kill switch to pin Whipwreck at 7:09 to win the three-way.
I thought there was a little too much going on here for me to fully digest. I mean, from the get-go, they were working incredibly fast. It almost felt a little too fast and rushed, and then like this fireball, was this like a normal thing that he would always do?
They were starting to incorporate that, yeah, because of the Sinister Minister deal. But
I don't know if I've ever liked any fireball spot in a pro wrestling match. It's just, I don't know.
Hogan and Warrior have really tainted it for you, I guess.
I suppose if that became a classic moment, maybe I'd think differently. But and I'm sure the lighting going out probably didn't help matters here for these guys.
Probably threw them a bit when the power goes out in a particular venue.
Yeah. They did a good job, though, you know, seemingly keeping their calm.
Justin Credible's with Francine, who is rubbing a kendo stick. That was her gimmick at the time.
Yeah, I was jerking this thing off.
Yeah, this kendo stick was about to go. And Justin Credible was a character that, you know, a lot of people got into at the time. I watched back, and it was just like, this was a perfect character for 2000. I mean, he's got...
What was his character? You tell me.
He talked really slow, and he just did this. I mean, everything I break down about Justin Credible, like from the... just the slow talking, the Got Blood shirt, the pun name. God, I don't think I would enjoy this character today at all.
Hmm.
But I mean, this guy worked really hard in 2000.
Definitely.
Like, he was at a position where, I mean, I don't know if maybe he was ready for that top main event position, but worked. I just remember in 2000 when all these guys were leaving, Justin Credible was someone like him, Jerry Lynn, Steve Corino. Those were the guys really in that main event picture that were keeping this thing afloat near the end, because their roster got so thin in 2000 when everyone was leaving.
Yeah. You can definitely tell just even in a little promo like this, the guy was trying incredibly hard, and you know, obviously saw this as his big chance to break out, and you know, did everything he could to take advantage of it. Maybe the issue was just maybe he was capable of a main event level, but didn't necessarily have anything that special about him yet.
There is a close up of the ECW website where they note that Jim Quigley is ringside taking his pervert pics and then putting them up on the website featuring the upskirt camera.
Yeah.
And you literally had a close up of a guy's computer scrolling down on the website.
This looked like it might have been Windows 95 that they were using. As I go to ecwwrestling.com now on my iPhone, 14 years later.
It should redirect to WWE, I think.
No.
No?
It says you landed on ecwwrestling.com. This page is parked free courtesy of GoDaddy.com.
Oh, you could buy it.
Yeah.
Shit.
That's right.
I wonder how much ecwwrestling.com would go for.
Quite a bit, I imagine.
The Dangerous Alliance comes out. Lou E. Dangerously doing a Paul Heyman gimmick with Elektra. This guy who is formerly Bilvis Wesley doing an Elvis gimmick. And C.W. Anderson. Quite the group here. Lou keeps telling the fans to be quiet. Finally says his full name. And he has an important announcement. He says Elektra, who is all covered up here, has never had plastic surgery, which began a show your tits chant. She never has to wear makeup to look good, which the crowd chants bullshit. And she is not just tits and ass. She's the toughest woman in the business today and invites anyone to come out to try and kick her ass. And the challenge is answered by Jazz, one of my favorite female performers who doesn't, I feel, falls under the radar for a lot of people. I was always a big fan of Jazz.
Right, yeah, Jazz.
Not the music, the wrestler. And she comes out to music you know she never came out to. And she attacks all three guys, tears off Elektra's jacket to reveal a Mike Awesome t-shirt, which at the time, I mean, this was the most hated man in ECW for the way he left the company the prior month, went to WCW, so this was the ultimate heel, as Joey Styles, you would infamously hear during the one-night stand commentary. So she's got this shirt on, and then Jazz hits a Falcon Arrow and tears the shirt off, where Elektra is wearing what can best be described as the Borat swimsuit.
Yes.
This might be the least amount of clothing a woman has ever worn on a pay-per-view. On a wrestling pay-per-view. Well,
no. They've actually had naked women on wrestling pay-per-views.
I guess there are certain specialty brand pay-per-views.
Okay.
And then she disappeared to the back. And we had a match as Kid Cash ran in, which led into our match with C.W. Anderson and Cash. Cash makes the save for Jazz after she is beaten down by the guys, and Jazz is helped to the back. Cash hits a springboard splash to the audience onto Wesley and Anderson. There's a hurricane run off the apron by Cash, who just... I mean, this guy was very reminiscent of like what the Young Bucks are now, where he did all these big high spots, and some people didn't enjoy that kind of wrestling, but... Man, this guy hit everything he did. It was a tremendous talent. Tries a Hurricane Rana in the ring. It's countered with a powerbomb by CW. Does a double springboard into a splash onto Anderson. Anderson hit a spinebuster for a two count. And then, of all these things in ECW that, like, you never would get DQs or stuff, the referee warns Kid Cash about throwing closed fists. Like that's the line in the sand for ECW. Closed fists will not be tolerated in ECW.
Watch that closed fist. Maybe put a steel chair in that fist and then it'll be okay.
Beautiful Billy comes in behind the referee's back. Lou has the phone and goes to hit Cash, who ducks and takes out Billy with the phone. And then there's a top rope Hurricane Rana where one of his legs like underhooks Anderson coming off, and Cash pins him at 6 minutes. So short match and kind of just a showcase for Kid Cash to do a bunch of big spots.
Yeah, it was okay.
I will say one thing for ECW matches. Like, none of them felt like they dragged. Like, they were fairly quick matches for the most part. But at the same token, it's not like you got any classic matches on this show either.
Not on this show. And this was just a fine, you know, mid-card match. I think perhaps the issue was just now the guy felt really over at all.
Rob Van Dam's in the back. This was Rob Van Dam at his best in terms of just being a dick. Like, you could totally sympathize with just hating this guy.
Yeah, a very different promo for RVD. I mean, you know, he actually talks here and isn't just kind of playing his stereotypical surfer
dude.
Character. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone, you know, when he would can't come over to the WWF and the knock was, oh, he can't cut a promo. It's like, no, he cuts a different kind of promo.
Yep.
He's not coming out there and he's going to be Steve Austin or The Rock. If that's your definition of a good promo, fine. It's a very narrow-minded view. This heel character, I mean, and he was a babyface at this point, but this was a great cocky heel persona that you can't convince me was a bad promo when it was this version of Rob Van Dam.
Yeah. I think he would have benefited, you know, just like how he had Fonzie here as somebody to talk to. I think in the WWE, he would have benefited with a mouthpiece for him to kind of play this laid back guy against.
Picture this guy, and it's okay, we're going to put you with Kane.
Ugh, that sucked.
So Van Dam is here with Bill Alfonso and his best friend, Scotty Anton. That was his full name on this show. Rob Van Dam's best friend, Scotty Anton.
Yeah.
I mean, you having not even seen this show, I mean, was this not the most telegraphed turn in the world on this show?
Oh, of course.
I mean, God damn, was this fucking hitting you over the head here what was going to happen.
Yeah.
So Scotty Anton, for those not familiar, Scotty Riggs of the American Males fame in WCW, who had left WCW and came into ECW as Rob Van Dam's best friend, Scotty Anton.
Are they legit best friends?
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think they are. Yeah, Van Dam was very enamored that he was on pay-per-view so he could say the word fuck during this promo. Says he was coming off a leg injury where he had to vacate the television title, and this was his first match in 3 months, and the end is Rob Van Dam, who was carrying the charisma portion here.
Excited, Scotty? Oh, yeah.
Just mesmerizing
I don't
stuff.
Know. I don't really understand what he's the best friend, yes, but it just seemed like there's nothing to this character at all. He was wearing that the Kangol hat. He actually looked a lot like the bodyguard in the WWE, who would always be ringside. Like the big jacked up bodyguard.
Oh, Jim Dotson.
Yeah. He really looked a lot like him.
Yeah, fuck, they did look alike, you're right. Mm. You know, when you mentioned the Kangol hat and the best friend, I wonder if this was a playoff of New Jack and Denzel.
What do you mean?
Or I guess I'm thinking... I think of Samuel L. Jackson with the Kangol hat. But remember the part in Beyond the Mat where it's like, I don't know if he's Denzel. Maybe he's Denzel's best friend.
I think you're looking way too deep into it. And they're not even the same person.
Dude, Beyond the Mat came out like right around this time in 2000. Like it had just come out.
Yeah, and therefore Paul Heyman said, oh, you know what would be really
Let's
funny?
Let's do a best friend gimmick.
I don't think so, John. And
maybe Scotty Anton should have come in as New Jack's best friend.
Maybe he should have came in as Samuel L. Jackson.
Samuel L. Jackson and Rob Van Dam. And it builds to a match with Denzel. Tag match with Denzel and New Jack.
No.
Balcony dive by Denzel?
No, I don't think so.
No, you don't like it?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Three-way, another three-way on this show, tag match. The Baldies, Nova and Chris Chetty, and Danny Doring and Roadkill.
Nova came out in his Venom outfit.
Yes.
And I will say Nova and probably Roadkill aside, there were just some awful in-ring outfits in this match. Chris Chetty is wearing these baggy pleather parachute pants.
Oh, this guy was right out of the 2000 club scene.
Dude, and this sleeveless t-shirt. You had Danny Doring wearing these generic blue spandex tights that say Danny across the back and a white tank top. And then DeVito with these cut-off t-shirt and Adidas track pants. They just look like so indie and cheap.
I never liked Chris Chetty. I never liked this guy. I never thought he would amount to anything. Danny Doring, his gimmick was his penis. That literally was his gimmick. Oh. Everything about him was like his promos were double entendres. Talk about his Danaconda. That was his gimmick. He had a big dick.
And then...
And somehow that attracted him to a man named Roadkill.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
They start fighting on the runway. DeVito got sent off the ramp into the barricade. The Baldies consisted of DeVito and Angel, who I think at ECW stuck around. Angel would have become a decent star in ECW. I mean, he had a good look to him, size, and especially as that roster was depleting, they were starting to get more and more behind him, but a victim just kind of the time period he came around in. Anyway, Nova hit a crossbody to Doring and DeVito on the floor. The storyline they were trying to push was that Chris Chetty was the first graduate of the House of Hardcore, and he was also pushed as Taz's cousin. And Danny Doring was the second graduate of the House of Hardcore. So, man, this was like a New Japan Dojo kind of influence here. Chris Chetty and Danny Doring.
Mm-hmm.
Roadkill. Oh, by the way, when I first watch Danny Doring, I always thought that was such a shitty ring name because it's just begging the crowd to start chanting boring at Doring. It's like, why would you have a name that rhymes with boring? It's so easy for a crowd to just turn on you.
You should have a name that rhymes with this is awesome.
Yeah. Danny Fossum would have been a way better gimmick. Yeah.
Willis Fossum.
Willis Fossum.
Yeah.
There's a double flapjack to Roadkill by the Baldies. They set up two chairs in the ring, and Roadkill gets chokeslammed through these two chairs. Nova hit this DDT Ace Crusher combination, and then Vic Grimes, who was also a member of the Baldies, comes in with a guitar and takes the bareback.
Huh?
The bareback.
Oh, that guy.
Danny Doring's move. There's a top rope leg drop to Grimes, which, as we mentioned, the Danaconda. Angel then hits a guitar shot to Doring, eliminates him at 3 minutes and 24 seconds, to which Joey Styles says after the guitar shot, Danny Doring has gone limp. Roadkill then hits a splash off the top through Grimes on the table on the floor and then grabs his knee, so he's taken out of the match. And then Nova hits the Ace Crusher coming out of the corner, and then Chetty and Nova hit the tidal wave off the top, which is a combination splash and leg drop as they both dove off the top to DeVito, and they win the match at 5:41.
Was that what that was?
The tidal wave.
It looked like the two of them just like were kind of like holding each other over the across each other's shoulders and both splashed a guy at the same time.
No, Nova did a leg drop and Chetty just plummeted down on his stomach.
Oh, okay. It looked really cool. I liked that a lot. The whole match itself, like from the get-go, it just kind of felt like one big finishing sequence. You know, it just like it was fast-paced action to start, a lot of big moves, one big move after another, and it just to me it just kind of felt like an incomplete story by the end of it.
I would be curious to ask some of these guys about the structuring, because so often you heard about ECW where Paul would always be, you know, at these shows, go out there and have the best match you can.
Yeah.
And they weren't as structured. So when you had to go to a pay-per-view, you did have to be under the gun. You did have to hit their time cues. And I wonder if for younger guys that weren't as experienced, if that was a big problem for them of trying to put together a 7-minute match when they're used to going out there and not being worried about time cues. And you'd get a lot of this where it's like, it's kind of cheap when you look at it, when you just go right into near falls and kicking out a guy's finishes. I think that stuff should be saved, and I think it's kind of a lazy way to get a crowd into a match. I think you can be more creative than that.
The problem is for me, it didn't necessarily work, you know, just because I wouldn't necessarily buy any of the near falls that would happen just immediately.
The Baldies attack them after the match, and this prompts New Jack to come out to his new Jim Johnston's version of Ice Cube, I guess.
Yeah.
And comes out, as I mentioned, Styles had to revoice all of this. And New Jack uses a fork. He bloodies up DeVito. They fight into the crowd. He puts DeVito on a table and then climbs to the second level and dives off the balcony through the table. And this became a big problem for New Jack because he did this spot and then it became like routine, that he had to dive off a balcony every single time out. And this was just after the last pay-per-view where him and Vic Grimes had that near-death experience where they fell off together and Grimes like went head first. Like these two nearly killed each other coming off. And Jack had always blamed Grimes for that. I mean, they were really tempting fate with some of these dives.
Yeah, that's pretty nuts when you're expected to jump off of the second floor once a month.
This was like Jeff Hardy doing a swanton every show, and that was considered, oh, you gotta save your bumps on your bump card. Jack was diving off balconies here at most of their pay-per-views.
And it's not like there's much padding on the bottom, too.
There was nothing. It was concrete.
It's one piece of plywood
and
a body, I suppose, but this was nuts. But I will say, you know, man, did they do a great job of protecting this guy, New Jack. You know, here, I think their treatment of him is just great. He comes out like the secret boss of a video game, background music and all. And then, you know, he just comes out like this mythical ultraviolet man who seems legitimately psycho and therefore scarier than any big man you could possibly bring out. Like, in the hands of a WWE or WCW, I think he'd just be some generic plunder match dude who couldn't really wrestle. But here, he's an attraction.
And awesome promo. He was such a great promo. We need to find the right review and have him on. It'd be the greatest interview.
Wow.
He still, to me, is my favorite interview we ever had on Fight Network Radio, where he came on, and it was the only time one of the program directors came to me and was like, I know we're on satellite radio, but this is a little bit much. I mean, what he said was just, oh my God, man. It was just like,
what did he say?
Oh man, it was like, I think we did a contest the next day of how many times he said fuck or motherfucker, and it was like in the hundreds during this 20-minute interview. I mean, N-bombs, fuck, shit, talked about drug deals. I mean, there was, at some point, there was like sirens in the background where he was like, I can't remember what he said, but something about like they don't have a fucking warrant or something. Like, he's just awesome. He's one of my favorite interviews to listen to. I could listen to New Jack just talk for hours. He was always someone I really enjoyed. He was a guy, as a kid, it was like, this to me was, to me, perfect pro wrestling, where you can watch a show and it's like all these guys are pro wrestlers, and you know that behind the scenes they're all probably cool with each other, they get along, but New Jack you were never quite sure with. Mm-hmm. Like, this guy came across like he was legitimately nuts.
Yeah.
And to the crowd it was like, remember that time we were at WrestleMania Access, or not Access, at Wrestle Reunion?
Yeah.
And New Jack comes up and he just wants to be interviewed.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck, man, you don't have to twist my arm. And we just started chatting about, man, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, New Jack's a weird character.
Yeah.
Weird dude. But I'm glad that there's characters like that in professional wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the appeal to me of pro wrestling, is that you get the same industry employs Lance Storm as they do New Jack.
Yes.
What contrast?
Well, what other job would somebody, the personality type of a New Jack, be able to walk around with staple guns and what else did he have? Just forks. Yeah, and be able to jump off of balconies. It seems like he was made definitely for something like this.
Yeah, and I don't want to glorify all this stuff. Yeah, of course, that interview we did with New Jack, we talked very much about the Eric Koulos incident, and I kind of brought it up to him, like, if, you know, there's no way. That video, I still will not go back and watch.
It's fucked up.
Yeah. I my mind doesn't need that registered inside of it to see. I mean, that was horrible. There's mm-hmm. no defense for that kind of thing. You mm-hmm. have seen it, right?
Yeah.
Oh, Christ. I just, there's certain things I just don't want to watch. I don't, my mind doesn't need
to be. Well, that's not pro wrestling anymore. That was straight up
assault.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, very terrible. Anyway, so we got the balcony dive, and then he made his way back to the ring. That was just the setup for pretty much Angel had declared himself the new king of the streets, and New Jack was here to bring that title back to himself. But they were smart enough that's like, no one wants to see New Jack and Angel do a pro wrestling match. So this was essentially the match. He just comes in, Nova and Chetty hold Angel as Jack hits him with a guitar shot, hits a chair, dives off the top with a chair and pins him and proclaims himself the king of the streets, as Styles notes that TNN sucks.
So this was New Jack. No. Recapturing the King of the Streets title.
No match. Like you said.
This is all you needed.
Nobody wants to see him in a match. They just want to see him with the music blaring in the background, doing all this crazy shit.
And again, this is... He's a perfect character that you would have seen go to some company. You put him in a 10-minute match. It doesn't get over. It's like, oh, guy can't get over.
He's not talented.
Yeah. No, then this is pro wrestling where you are allowed to do stuff like this. Yeah. You can do whatever you want with a guy. You can hide him. You can accentuate stuff. And this guy was as over as anyone at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Corino, who at this point was ditching all of the comedy stuff, and they were starting to mold him into a much more serious character, taking on Yoshihiro Tajiri. And Corino comes out with Jack Victory, and Corino gets onto the microphone for what can only be described as a promo for the ages. He calls the people of Milwaukee morons. Says there are millions out there on pay-per-view, which if that were the fact, ECW would have had years more of success. And he says Tajiri made the mistake when he left the network, which Corino was a part of. And he has one last chance right now.
I'm a forgiving man, Tajiri. I'm giving you one last shot to get the rocks out of that Jap head of yours.
Ooh.
And come back to me. Because if you don't come back to me, you little slant-eyed bastard.
Ho-ho! Shoot!
I'm going to kick your ass!
Holy shit.
And Tajiri nods like he knows what he's talking about. Yeah.
And Tajiri just kicks him in the head to cut off this blatant racism.
Well, racism is definitely effective in getting me involved and invested in a match. So, yeah, this was fun.
Were you behind Tajiri after this? Did this denote a specific heel babyface dynamic?
I would say so. Depending where you are, I suppose.
What did you think of Steve Corino? Did you get to see a lot of him in ECW or not as much?
No, not as much, but I thought he was very good here.
He was, to me, he was a guy I saw very little in. I just saw him as a comedy bit character. I mean, small body type, had the darker hair, and just he wore like a singlet. He looked like a prelim guy. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all I saw the guy as. He would always be doing job matches in the WWF on Superstars and stuff. And then it was during this time period, he put on some size. I think it was Raven that told him, dye your hair blonde. It looks way better when you bleed, which, fact.
Oh, my God. And in this match, he went from blonde hair to looking like Raggedy Andy with the stringy red hair in a matter of seconds.
Yeah. Corino always got criticized that he would just bleed gratuitously.
Mm-hmm.
But man, this is where, like, if you're not a pro wrestling fan, you'll never understand. But man, this guy bled great.
Yeah.
Like, he was a great bleeder.
Yeah.
Like, it just looked awesome.
Put that on the resume.
Yeah. Great bleeder.
Yeah.
And there was never a character at that time period, I think, that I, man, just totally had a different opinion of so quickly. Like, just a little bit of size on him, which helped. And this... just a change of look. He felt like a new character, and all of a sudden, he felt like a upper card guy.
Mm.
And this was the beginning of that. So they start the match. Tajiri applies the tarantula. Then they fight on the ramp, and Tajiri hits the brainbuster. And then Joey Styles notes, Corino is busted wide open from that brainbuster on the runway. Digest that one for a few seconds and come to a conclusion.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Steve, I was trying to figure out where he would have gotten hit with to justify the blood, but I guess that was it.
Styles, the brainbuster just cut him open.
He scraped himself.
So, like a minute into the match, Corino is just bleeding buckets here. There's a running dropkick to Corino in the Tree of Woe as this blood just flows out of him upon impact, right as the camera is there. Tajiri brings in a chair, but Victory then grabs his leg, and Corino is able to hit a super kick. They bring a table into the ring. Corino goes for a fisherman suplex, a Northern Light suplex, gets a two count. Styles says he's not going to use any cute cliches like Crimson Mask to describe Steve Corino. Tajiri then applies the octopus, hits the miss to Jack Victory, but then Corino comes back with a power slam, Tajiri then hits this flurry of kicks, and Jim Molyneux could have stopped the fight here. These kicks. Carino is very unresponsive here. I mean, this could have been a TKO.
Well, with the blood above the eye.
Very dangerous. Fighter's safety always paramount. And then Carino is put onto the table, and Tajiri comes off the top with a double foot stomp, putting him through the table and pins Carino at 10:25. And then after the match, Kentaro Kanemura comes in attacking Tajiri to help the racist.
That's right.
Bullshit. And hits an airplane spin into a slam. Jack Victory joins in on the attack. And then Dusty Rhodes, this wasn't a run-in, this was a brisk walk-in, and hits...
What was Dusty Rhodes doing?
Dusty Rhodes had left WCW at this point and was doing stuff with ECW and was feuding with Steve Carino. And Carino always credits that feud with Dusty Rhodes that helped him turn into a main event guy at that time. And Carino would win the ECW title before the end of the year. Hmm. Just a crazy turnaround for that guy. And Dusty Rhodes, that feud really helped him. So Dusty hits the guys with a pair of bionic elbows. Then Rhino runs in, attacks Dusty Rhodes from behind. Just a great heel move, attacking the old man from behind. And everyone's fighting as music hits. And we were supposed to know, hey, it's the Sandman. But unfortunately, this music didn't exactly signal Sandman, who appeared in the balcony and about an hour later made his way to the ring.
The match itself, let's just get back to the Tajiri Carino match. I thought it was really good. I've always been a big fan of Tajiri, and seeing him in ECW even more so, because he was able to do a lot more than just kicks, and, you know, was treated like a serious badass rather than just some weak cruiserweight amongst the WWE run that he had.
So the Sandman comes out. Everyone's fighting here as... Sandman makes his way into the ring. Rhino's waiting for him. It's a television title match with Rhino defending the title, and they play up the fact that the only title the Sandman has not won in ECW is the television title. They had tried to do this match on pay-per-view a number of times, and attacks by Rhino had always postponed the match, but finally we were going to get the match. Sandman's pouring beer into the fans, lighting up a cigarette, and the build-up to this match included Rhino attacking the Sandman's wife, Lori. And here this match would take place on Mother's Day. And Joey Styles says that this will be a far cry from the Rob Van Dam, Jerry Lynn match we're going to see later. This is not a wrestling match. Very appropriate for a Sandman description. There's a leg drop to Rhino. He's draped on the barricade. They fight on the ramp with a table draped against the ropes. Rhino runs down the ramp, jumps off a chair as Sandman gets out of the way, and Rhino shoulder blocks through the table against the ropes. Sandman then hits a pile driver onto a table, gets a two count, then hits a second one. Jack Victory comes down. Lori comes from behind and hits Jack Victory with a cane. And then Steve Carino comes from behind, attacks Lori. Sandman runs out, takes a pile driver from Rhino, and then Rhino takes Lori, pulls her into the ring, onto the apron, lifts her up, and Rhino pile drives this woman through a table on the floor, off the apron.
That's a move you don't see many wrestlers take today.
Nor would it be a setup for a bigger spot. This wasn't even like the big spot of the whole deal. So he then sets Lori up in the corner, her lifeless body against a table in the corner, goes to gore her when Sandman hits him with a cane, goes to check on Lori, lifts her up, turns around, and he gets speared through the table while he's carrying Lori, and Rhino pins Sandman at 6:25. Now, before we get into the post-match, what did you think of this match, if you want to call it that?
Well, I felt like Sandman is somebody who...
Never needs to wrestle a match, I believe.
Exactly. To me, he's somebody like on the level of Hulk Hogan in terms of this ECW crowd. He's so over that it doesn't matter how much wrestling he actually does. People will react to anything this guy attempts in this match. The match was whatever. A lot of big spots.
It's more an angle.
Yeah.
To set up this attack on Lori. And as Sandman and Lori are dead in the corner, Rhino gets on the microphone and says, "Happy Mother's Day, you fucking bitch."
Whoa.
Rhino.
How Generation X?
Yes.
How rebellious.
You wouldn't get these promos from Rhino in WWE.
No, you wouldn't. I didn't know the storyline, but this definitely felt like the pretty awesome culmination with some pretty crazy stunts to whatever they were doing.
They replay the angle, and this is just a bad segue. We went from this big, heavy-duty angle where a woman might be dead to plugging the pervert pictures on the ECW website, which Joey Styles says, I'm not comfortable shilling the site right now. And as we watch, the camera just stay on this Windows 95 computer featuring someone scrolling through, clicking to go to the next page. It doesn't load, so he clicks again.
I mean, this is such bare bones.
Like, remember the days when...
this was like on dial-up, I bet.
Like when going on the internet to see pictures was a big deal. Now, you know, you could see a video on your phone, or like in the toilet, man, when you go to the bathroom. Now, back then, it was like, oh, we got pictures, pervert pics,
bikinis.
Yeah.
Jerry Lynn and Rob Van Dam. This was Van Dam's return to ECW. Bill Alfonso and Rob Van Dam's best friend Scotty Anton in the corner of Van Dam. Match begins. Lynn was starting to turn heel at this point, where he felt the fans were not appreciative enough of Jerry Lynn, who also got injured and didn't receive any of the fanfare Rob Van Dam received when he got injured. They did their great fish out of water spot early on. The crowd was loving it, chanting ECW. So many spots in this match. I mean, this was a vintage Rob Van Dam ECW match from this time period where he would just do everything imaginable. And there were people that really loved it, and there were other people that just hated this guy. But it was certainly over to that ECW crowd. There was a cartwheel into a backflip by Van Dam. Lynn hit a springboard dropkick that sent Van Dam off the apron to the floor and then followed it up with a helo. Van Dam missed a moonsault off the guardrail when Lynn got out of the way. Lynn hit this great leg drop off the second rope. The story here was that Lynn is the only person to have kicked out of the five-star frog splash, and Van Dam is the only one who was kicked out of Lynn's cradle pile driver. Lynn throws a chair at Van Dam's face. He countered the leg sweep with the idea that Jerry Lynn has figured out all of Rob Van Dam's big moves and has counters to everything. We saw the rolling thunder to Lynn on top of a chair, then a running drop kick to the face of Lynn. Lynn then hit a superplex. There was a battle on the apron back and forth, and both ended up going through a table when Lynn used a bulldog and sent each other down. Lynn then takes out Rob Van Dam's best friend, Scotty Anton, on the floor with a somersault off the apron, and Styles proclaims that Rob Van Dam's best friend, Scotty Anton, will not be a factor for the rest of the match now that he's been laid out. Just in case you are not sure. Alfonso then sends Lynn off the top and crotches him. And this was strange because Rob Van Dam was clear-cut babyface here with the heel manager, and Don Callis was talking about how he'd like to beat Bill Alfonso to death. It was very weird. The heel, anyway. There was a five-star frog splash to Lynn with the chair, and then Don Callis got up to leave the broadcast booth. Carino and Victory do yet another run-in. They attack Van Dam. Lynn then fights off the network. Rhino comes in. He spears Jerry Lynn. Rhino then powerbombs Rob Van Dam. Van Dam then makes a comeback on Rhino, hits a Van Daminator to Cyrus, then hits one to Jerry Lynn, goes for the frog splash, but as he climbs to the top, Rob Van Dam's best friend, Scotty Anton, shoves Van Dam off the top to the floor and then throws him back into the ring. Jerry Lynn hits his finish, the cradle pile driver, for a two count. This wasn't even the finish. He had to do another one on top of a chair where he didn't really land on the chair, and Jerry Lynn pins Rob Van Dam at 19 minutes, 51 seconds, and it was Rob Van Dam's first loss in 26 months, ending the winning streak, and it's the first time Jerry Lynn has ever beaten Rob Van Dam.
Mm-hmm. I had a lot of high expectations going into this match because of, you know, sort of the reputation these two had built. But I never really felt like they got the crowd as much as their previous matches. In fact, I felt like the audience was getting more and more kind of tired, as if they had seen all this before. Overall, I thought the match was just didn't really flow that well, and it was just kind of maybe even too spotty for these guys. And plus, the run-ins didn't really help. Like, I don't mind running the use of weapons with these ECW rules, but when you take liberties with that and just throw in all these blatant run-ins and still have the matches continue, I think it gets kind of ridiculous.
But there was no close fists.
Yeah.
Remember that. Yeah, this was not their best match they had had together. I guess significant because Jerry Lynn, this was his win over Rob Van Dam. But, I mean, at the time, it was just, I remember at the time, it was like, really, Rob Van Dam's going to have a feud with Scotty Riggs? Hmm. And they would have a pay-per-view match together at the next pay-per-view. Hmm. So
anyway. Yeah, and you expect a bit more creativity than, you know, that this the blatant best friend turning on him.
His best friend.
Yeah.
No longer. His sworn enemy.
If they've made, if they mentioned, oh, he's just a casual acquaintance.
No, look, it's his.
It would have been less obvious, maybe.
It's his third cousin, Scotty Anton. I have a feeling this match went longer than it was supposed to because the main event turned into a 12.5-minute match. Mm. You would imagine going on last that they would have been given more time. This was. The way it was set up, it was to be a three-way with Justin Credible, Lance Storm, and Tommy Dreamer. And this turned out to be Lance Storm's final match with ECW before he was going to go over to WCW. And they ended up turning this into a singles match as this would be the Battle of the Impact Players for the ECW title. And Credible comes out. He cuts a promo about the original plan for this to be a three-way but says, I have unfinished business with Lance Storm. And he swears to God, if anyone but Lance Storm comes out, he's going to throw the title in the trash can just like he did the tag titles when he won the ECW title. So threatening to desecrate the title, which was blasphemy at this time.
Yeah.
Tommy Dreamer comes out, but security and Paul Heyman run out to hold him back as Credible is threatening to disgrace the title. And Paul Heyman yelled, he has us by the balls about 46 times to make sure that soundbite was picked up on camera. So Storm comes out. Dreamer reluctantly goes to the back as he's pissed off that he's being forced out of this match. And Lance Storm says he is going to take this title from Justin Credible. So the match begins. I think the crowd was a little taken out with Tommy Dreamer not in the match. I think he was the most over of the three that they really wanted in here, and I don't think they had fully taken to Lance Storm as kind of the baby face going after the title.
What was the reason why? Was there another reason why Dreamer wasn't in this match?
I don't know what the reason was other than I think they wanted to do just a clean finish here with Credible keeping the title, beating Lance Storm. I mean, on paper, it sounds like a nice story, but I just think that the crowd, they wanted to see Tommy Dreamer in this match. And an interesting note that Lance has pointed out was that Lance was left to his own to put this match together. And this is like his last match. It's for the title. And you had seen all the problems they had just had with Mike Awesome. And I think that speaks volumes to the trust that they Heyman and them had in Lance Storm. Like, you lay out the match, and it's like they had total confidence that he would put the guy over, make him look strong, and that's exactly what Lance pretty much did in this match. So it starts off with Lance Storm, Irish whipping him into the corner, and then drop kicks him to the floor. Lance takes a kendo stick shot to the head and end up getting busted open. This was a believable guy getting busted open. Kendo stick shot to the head rather than a brain buster. And there was a We Want Dreamer chant as Credible had the heat and Storm was bleeding. Storm hit a Hurricane Rana, leapt to the top rope, and hit this jumping back elbow. Lance hit a Northern Lights suplex for a two count. Then Credible hit a super kick for a two count, sending Storm into a chair in the ring. Credible then takes a hip toss through a table on the runway. Lance applies the single leg crab, and then Francine breaks it up with her shoe, which prompts Dawn Marie, who was in Lance's corner, to come in for the big cat fight spot. And Credible hits Dawn Marie with That's Incredible, which was a tombstone pile driver, taking Dawn Marie out.
It was the obligatory pile drive the woman in the match spot.
Of course, you need that. Storm then hits a cane shot and a pile driver to Justin Credible for a two count, then goes for another tombstone. Credible counters it, hits his tombstone, gets a near fall, and then Storm gets crotched on the top, and Credible lifts him off, hits That's Incredible again, and pins Lance clean. 12.5 minutes.
I thought there were some nice moments here, some really good technical wrestling, a lot of really like clean sequences of reversals that I'm sure Lance is probably just an expert at. The ending, though, for me, just kind of came out of nowhere, and it almost felt like we didn't really get much of a finishing sequence. The way it just ended, I mean...
It felt like when they did the sequence where they countered the tombstone, and instead of the near fall, I feel... The crowd would have been more up for that finish. Just seemed like the crowd wasn't as much into this main event as what had preceded it. And I think having Tommy Dreamer taken out of the match kind of pulled the wind out of their sails. I mean, it was a story that was kind of cool. The Impact players here, that is Lance's last match, and he puts over his teammate. But, I mean, that wasn't...
Was that even the story?
Like, wasn't really pushed. It was like, I don't know how much of this audience knew Lance was leaving here. Right. It just didn't feel like a main event match to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they were still, I mean, this was Justin Credible's early portion of his title win. So I think you had that as well handicapping you, where the crowd hadn't really adopted Justin Credible as a top guy with the title. After the match, Tommy Dreamer does a run-in and attacks Credible with a kendo stick and calls Francine a fucking cunt.
Yeah. So?
He then holds the kendo stick and teases that he's going to do the obligatory kendo stick shot to a woman match.
Oh, okay.
In the match, yep. After the match. Then Francine tries to hug Dreamer. Dreamer hugs her, teasing that they are going to put their differences aside, not believe she is a fucking cunt. But then, as the title is laid out in front of Dreamer, he lifts up Francine, runs across the ring, and hits her with the Spicoli driver. And leaves the woman laying and sends the crowd home happy.
Yeah.
You know, awesome. The feel-good moment on Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
So that was Hardcore Heaven. Hardcore Heaven was the show. And then we got a graphic for their next pay-per-view.
I'm trying to understand because definitely those are the big things. And traditionally, even today, teasing of... you know, Bully Ray attacking Dixie Carter. Like, the attacking of the women, of the heel woman, or even the babyface woman. It's usually a... it always gets a big reaction. I don't know. I'm trying to think, is there anything wrong with that? Or is it just storytelling? Is there nothing wrong with that?
I think it's the idea that whether it's Stephanie McMahon with Daniel Bryan or Dixie Carter, it's the idea that, well, this woman can say anything she wants. No one can lay a hand on her. And the crowd pops when the guy finally snaps. Probably not the greatest social commentary.
In real life, no matter what a woman does, if you lay a hand on her, I think... you know, most men would say, or most people would say, there's no reason, no matter what a woman says, for you to lay a hand on her.
Absolutely. And there's a big reason why Spike TV doesn't want any of that on their network and bans that kind of male on female violence.
I'm not gonna
paint wrestling fans as, you know, advocating man-on-woman violence.
No, but
I think there's enough of them that understand that these are performers. This is make-believe.
Absolutely. I think everybody does... most people, yes. Probably everybody does understand that it's just a storyline. But, it's interesting. That's all.
Look at Wei really dissecting this ECW show on its...
I think it's very...
social level.
Well, the whole show itself is... Because it is so...
It's an interesting psychology of the ECW fan base at the time.
Not just the ECW fan base, but the pro wrestling fan base.
Because at this time, that was a staple in WWF by this point, putting women through tables.
Yep.
Putting elderly women through tables.
Yeah.
So we saw... What did we see in this? A tombstone to a woman... A Spicoli driver to a woman, a pile driver off of an apron through a table to a woman, a spear to a woman through a table. Am I missing anything?
I don't know. Fucking cunt. Hi, mom, you whore. Those signs.
Happy Mother's Day, you fucking bitch.
Yep.
So, some real polite people you'd really love to invite over for dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. ECW Hardcore Heaven. I gave this show 4 out of 10. I didn't think this was one of ECW's better shows.
Right.
Nothing great on this show. Some bad, but nothing deplorable.
No, the show never dragged at all. I mean, for me, I think there's still
very fast-paced show, which I think is something, whether ECW was at their peak or on their way down, I never found their shows really dragged. They were always paced and, very well, I thought.
And of course, you really can't beat these crowds. These are like the crowd.
Add so much.
The crowds of legend and, you know, really over characters. Some good wrestling, didn't drag, but definitely far from one of ECW's best offerings. The main event I thought was a little disappointing, as were some of the other matches. Overall, I give it a 6.
All right, well, let's see what you guys had to say. Of course, this pay-per-view, along with all of the ECW shows, are up on the WWE Network. And we'll start off with Martin from London. Hardcore Heaven 2000 was one of the first pay-per-views I watched when the network launched, though completely at random. At the time, I was pretty surprised they left all the swearing and violence against women in the show, although the New Jack footage was taken out at the time, but I understand everything is back in now. Fun observation is if you look closely at the fans in attendance in Milwaukee, there's a young Mr. Ken Anderson standing in the first few rows at ringside. Pretty amazing that in just 5 years, he would be a star in the WWE. As far as what I remember from when I watched a few months back, Tanaka and Mahoney was a physical opener, and it's incredible how healthy Tanaka is today and all the chair shots to the head he took in ECW and FMW. Carino and Tajiri was good, and right as I was wondering when Carino would gig, sure enough, on cue, he did. Rhino Sandman was a good brawl, although I'm always taken out of the WWE versions of Sandman entrances with no Enter Sandman. RVD and Lynn was their usual great match at the time, and I enjoyed the credible Storm main event, a good 7 out of 10 show, and stunning to think that they would be gone in just 9 months.
Go to Jordan from Saskatoon. This event was super fun to watch. I thought Cyrus made a great heel commentator that made me laugh several times during the broadcast. Having both the VHS version of the show that I found on the internet and watching the network version, I do enjoy the ECW music entrances a lot more. Man in a Box by Alice in Chains will always be Dreamer's theme song in my head. I thought all of the matches were quite solid from top to bottom. The opener took me out of it at the end with the amount of near falls. Too many and it loses its meaning. RVD and Jerry Lynn was great, and the angle with Credible Storm and Dreamer was great. Match of the night should have gone to Steve Carino and Tajiri. I thought they were great. Overall, I would have given the show 8.5 Rantine pool stick strokings out of 10.
Next is Mike from Brisbane, Australia. To be honest, I find a lot of these old ECW shows hard to watch as they just don't hold up with time, although I do remember loving this the first time I watched it about 10 years ago. There was a lot of action here and every guy on the card worked their ass off, even if the main event was a bit of a letdown. What I find incredible about any ECW card is that all of the talent are over from top to bottom. I'm sure RVD Jerry Lynn will divide opinions, and although it was very spot-filled and choreographed, I was able to buy it because of the amount of times those guys had wrestled each other by this point. It's not unrealistic that they would know how to counter each other's moves in such fluid sequences. I loved it. Balls Tanaka was insane and something we'll never see again in a major company anywhere in the world. Just an example of how the crazy things guys would do to get themselves in ECW over. I have the VHS version of this show. I picked up the video from a store years ago, and there was a weird cut and edit during the Carino Tajiri match. Did anyone else get this? Maybe it was the promo. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't really pick
it up. Imagine the VHS version of this would be a more entertaining presentation with all the music and those kind of reactions,
yeah,
than the network version.
But
for
what
sure.
Can you do? It's not, you can't really fault the WWE.
No, for, not at all. Not it'd be anything. That, or we can't put it up.
Exactly.
So this is what you got to deal with.
I think you should actually. I'm actually very surprised at how much they left in. You know, so
yeah. To their credit, when WWE they get criticized for editing all the. I mean, they know that their hardcore fan base would really shit on this if like they censored stuff.
Yeah,
and I mean. Can't really fault them for putting this in there. And you put a warning, and the world doesn't fall apart because you have this up on your network.
We go to Christian Small, who says, I have the show on VHS, and I have no way to play it these days, but I remember it very well. This was when Carino was really breaking out, and the poor guy bled buckets every show. This was one pay-per-view away from Jerry Lynn writing die on his stomach with Carino's own blood. At this point, the Lynn-RVD matches were a little overplayed in my view. This wasn't the worst match the two would have, but it didn't stand up to the series they had in 99. I also remember it for Scotty Riggs getting some attention for the only time in his career. The main event was a prime example of ECW's anything can change mentality hurting the show. Advertising Tommy for the title match and removing him like they did really hurt the match between Justin and Lance, which was good and would have been a good enough main event by itself. Also, why was Paul Heyman so crazy over Justin threatening to throw the belt in the trash? He could just go over and pick it out of there, no problem. I just felt it was a really poor way to write Tommy out of the match.
We go to Greg from Melbourne, Australia. Thank you for reviewing this show. I put in this request a few years ago and gave up. This show always stays with me as I bought a VHS of it from Blockbuster years ago without having seen anything other than the WWF at the time and only hearing people rave about Van Damme, Storm, and Credible on internet message boards. At the time, I totally got sucked into the complete brutality and crudeness of the show, from hearing a commentator tell someone, "I should kick your fucking ass," to the blood-splattering dropkick from Tajiri to Carino, and Rhino's off-the-apron pile driver and happy Mother's Day message. I was in total amazement. Watching it back now and knowing what's known about concussions, you wonder how many years Tanaka and Mahoney took off of each other's lives. It's a brutal match, but really set the tone in the expectations I had of ECW from watching it then on. Aside from the run-in finish, the RVD-Lynn match is one of my favorites of all time. The opening exchanges in particular were like nothing I had ever seen in wrestling before, and like a well-choreographed fight scene, it's one of the things I love in wrestling. When people ask how I can watch it, there's been a few occasions where I've pulled out the start of this match, as you can see the crowd's appreciation for both guys. Thanks for reviewing this show. Keep up the great work. And that is all.
Final piece of feedback. I like to know how it feels to watch a stripped-down erosion of this pay-per-view, as I assume all awesome music is torn out. No Man in a Box, no Pantera, no Intergalactic from the Beastie Boys. I don't honestly think I'd enjoy any of the network versions of these old shows, though the quality is probably a lot better compared to the VHS version. Hope this is I will say the streaming was perfect. It was excellent watching on the network. Everything looked great.
Yeah, I don't know if I've been noticing of late that it's kind of hit and miss with me, where I'll be watching something on the network and there'll just be this freezing, and it'll freeze for like up to a minute, and I'll also have problems like starting this show, and then I take a break and I come back, and it's like it's really hard to find your place. You know what I mean? Like there's no time marker, there's no—
Yeah, there is.
For mine there wasn't.
Well, how do you fast like, forward then?
I'm saying I can move it, but yeah, it's like I want to get to the hour 24 mark and I'll skim it, and it's not saying where the time is.
Oh, it does for me.
Really? Because yeah, I don't get that at all.
Are you watching on Apple TV? Or
No, I'm watching computer. It on my laptop.
Okay. Yeah, it does for me.
Okay, I'm going to show you this after.
Okay. He goes on to say, as for the show, it's pretty solid up and down the card and makes me wonder why so much talent failed or went unused in the WWE. Why was Carrillo never given a shot? Nonetheless, the ECW show without the Dudleys, Raven, Mike Awesome, or Taz, but still able to deliver is a hell of a thing, and this show definitely does.
All right, well, thanks, everyone, for your feedback to Hardcore Heaven, as we mixed it up this week. Next week, we are going to be joined by a guest on the program.
Who?
We are going to be chatting with another podcaster. Colt Cabana will be on the program, and we're going to review Wrestling Road Diaries 2. This is the follow-up to the first Wrestling Road Diaries, and this version features Colt Cabana on the road with Doc Gallows, who you'll remember as Festus, and Doc in TNA, as well as Cliff Compton, who was Domino in the WWE, and their weekend on the road doing a tour together where they get an unexpected setback with Gallows and an injury. So we're going to chat about that documentary next week. Me and Wei will review it, and then we'll have Colt on the show to answer our questions about the documentary.
Is this out yet?
Oh, yeah. It's been out since WrestleMania weekend or so. It came out about a week before WrestleMania. So people can go watch it online. I think you can just buy it right as a digital download.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Coltmerch.com.
Coltmerch.com.
.com.
You can go get it there. So for those of you out there, if you've seen the documentary and leave us feedback, that's great. But we also want to get questions from you. If you have questions for Colt Cabana, don't ask us about CM Punk. I don't think he's going to tell us when CM Punk is coming back, or what he had for lunch yesterday, or what his hairstyle looks like right now, or whatever the fuck's going on with CM Punk. So any questions you want for Colt Cabana are greatly appreciated on the message board.
Yeah. We'll just make shit up if you send us CM Punk questions.
Yeah, we'll just change him around.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? I don't know. Let's get out of here. I'm tired. I feel like you.
Okay. That's it?
Why don't you end the show? Come on. You got to get ready for this produced version we will do one day. End the show for us, Wei. I can hear
that. John,
the music's coming up under us.
You know what that music means? That means it's time for us to get out of here. I want to thank all of our sponsors. We got to...
Podcasttees.com/law.
Yes, podcasttees. some great shirts. I see you're wearing a beautiful shirt right there. I, my niece the other day was asking, "Hey, I don't know where the fuck
you've missed the bumper going out here. You've gone way over time at this point.
We are going out to the sounds of what? What is this? What is this great new hit radio hit, John? That we're hearing all.
Well,
in the background.
it was Hardcore Heaven. So right now we are hearing this great song called Heaven. What's the song about heaven?
Oh God, Tears in Heaven by Eric Clapton.
I couldn't make out if it was Eric Clapton or not. That's yeah, Tears from Heaven, Tears of Heaven. What's it called?
Yo, we will never work in radio.
Eric Clapton, Tears in Heaven, Tears in Heaven.
What a terrible song to go out with this.
Oh, it just died. What's the new song we're going to go out with?
Well, what is it?
Come on, host.
I think we should go out with a empowering song for women because of all the terrible...
Yeah, let's go out with that.
...songs about women. Let's go out with like a Sarah McLachlan song.
A Sarah McLachlan song? Can you name a Sarah McLachlan song without cringing? Let's look at
Building a Mystery.
When She Loved Me, Gloomy Sunday, Fallen, Possession, Building a Mystery, Ice Cream, Sweet Surrender. Holy fuck. Look at all these songs. Why do I have a feeling every one of these songs is the exact same message? Stupid. Song for a Winter's Night, Fumbling Towards Ecstasy, You Want Me To, River. Oh my God, Sarah McLachlan.
Let's go out with this song coming up.
Let's find a dubstep version of I Will Remember You to go out with.
I'd highly doubt you'd be able to find it.
I will find it.
We'll look it up right now.
I Will Remember You. There's a dubstep of everything, I think, out there.
Okay. No, I don't think that exists, man.
Sarah McLachlan dubstep. Mount Eden? Silence? The dubstep version?
Fine.
This is what all women want to hear.
Welcome back to Late Nights, CHFI 89.1 FM. This song comes to
98.1,
us.
But let's not get the frequency.
Whatever, 98.
Right? You just promoted a rival station.
I don't even think that frequency exists, 89.1. Tears and Other Strangers, and Don Johnson. Sometimes, I don't know where I'm going. You want? You could carry, just hit the post. Start, you know, do your little thing, man.
No, that's easy.
You're the broadcaster.
All right, we'll chat with you next week.
Goodbye. Oh, what a mess!
That was great.
What a mess.